Thursday is not just the beginning of the new fiscal year. It's the first day of Energy Action Month. It is an important month for the U.S. Army. Catherine Hammack is Assistant Secretary of the Army for Installations, Energy, and Environment, and here to explain why Energy Action Month matters to the Army and what it'll mean for the force's mission. Madam Secretary, it's great to see you again. Thank you for coming in, as always. What is Energy Action Month? What does it mean to the Army, and why are you paying attention to it? Thanks for being here today, as always.
Well, glad to be here with you, Francis. Energy, October being Energy Month, started almost 25 years ago, and it started as Energy Awareness Month, but it's really transcribed to Energy Action. Really, that's what we're looking for, is action, because to the Army, Energy Action today means resiliency. And resiliency is really the ability to anticipate, prepare for, and adapt to changing conditions. So when you have better understanding of your energy and better control over it and know when and where it's being used, you can use it like a resource, just as you do bullets and other tools that we need to accomplish our mission.
And throughout history, I've read references from mission executors, especially officers in the Army and the other branches, who understand very well the importance of energy. Maybe they haven't used those terms throughout history, used that word, but understanding it as a resource. So it strikes me that that's an appropriate evolution, as we're beyond the awareness phase, and the action phase seems to be appropriate. What are the issues that you hope to raise as far as an activity level in the Army, not just in the coming month, because a month is nice to pay attention to things, but it doesn't give you much time to execute? What's the agenda look like now for the Army, given the mission needs that you have?
It's really about resiliency. And as we've looked at energy over our bases, we found that in the last 10 years, we've had four times the number of power interruptions now as we did 10 years ago. And so with energy being one of those resources that is required, because it really is a link to our ability to be a resilient force, we must ensure that we have access to energy to do our mission. And so what we look at is diversified energy sources, energy efficiency, and really responsible energy actions. We've spent a lot of time, especially recently, talking about the why. It's not saving energy to be environmentally sensitive, although that's a byproduct. It's not saving energy to conserve greenhouse gases, although that's a byproduct too. It's really energy to ensure that we can be resilient and we can do the missions asked of us by this nation. Mm-hmm. So being resilient means we can adapt to whatever requirements come in, whether it's a hurricane that's headed toward the east coast of the United States and you don't know what's going to happen there, or forest fires in the western region. We need to ensure that we're resilient and adaptable so we can continue to function.
Well, you mentioned before we went on the air how that's manifesting itself in a variety of different scenarios. I mean, we have talked in the past about forward deployment in Afghanistan and the difficulties in getting energy to the sources to various locations, and how some renewable sources have affected that, have made that a lot easier. And you talked about a development that manifested itself in the Ebola fight based on what you'd learned in Afghanistan.
Absolutely. And what we have been doing is working on resilient structures. You know, tents, when you're out in the desert, they don't last that long. So pretty much after 2 or 3 years, the tent gets worn down, it gets brittle, it gets porous, and it can't control the environment, and it's a little difficult to sleep in there. So when we have resilient structures, and we've gone to some of the hard-sided structures, they're easier to set up, but they're easier to take down. That means we can move in and get focused on the mission much faster.
Mm.
When we talk about diversity of fuel, so I want to get back to that. I was recently reviewing a report where one of our major bases in Afghanistan, Bagram Airfield, has adapted to process the vegetable oil that's used in the dining facilities. And right now they're generating about 186 gallons of waste vegetable oil a day. There's a lot of people that go through that base.
Mm-hmm.
And so what they're doing is they're processing it and adding it to the fuel, because for our generators, it increases the lubricating capabilities of the fuel, and generators like that. So it actually is taking what would have been a waste to be disposed of and converting it into a viable use. Mm-hmm. And that's really what we want to do. We want to look at everything we do, look at where there's waste products that could be consumed or managed in a different manner to enhance our capabilities.
How many of these ideas do you think come from somewhere here in Washington? And how many of them come from the men and women, the soldiers in the field who say, wait a minute, we're throwing that away, but we could do this with it?
Most of them come from the ground up, and that's why I enjoy going out to facilities and talking to them about what they are doing now and how it's going to increase their capabilities. So just yesterday, I was at Anniston Army Depot in Alabama, looking at how we're resetting our equipment, bringing in battle-damaged or use-worn-out equipment and rehabbing it. They said that in one of their facilities, they pointed to LED lighting. And they said before, this was a big energy consumer, and the light quality wasn't very good. Now we put in energy-efficient lights, and the light quality's better, mm-hmm. and we're using less energy. So they've recognized that being aware of energy, taking action, actually increases their productivity. So it's a win all the way around.
One of the installations that is changing is Fort Carson. There's a demolition project that it was a very striking picture on your office's website of a backhoe knocking a building down there. And it says that there, the Army's an outside company is demolishing 144 units, replacing them with 144 new units. The ones that are going down, though, have been around for 60 years or so.
They have, and I walked through them a couple of months ago, and when you rotate soldiers through bases, you wear out facilities faster.
Sure.
And so in this housing area, we had been replacing soldiers there every 1 to 2 years, and they were at the end of their life. So in our housing partnership with an outside contractor, I think it's Balfour Beatty in this case,
yes,
they are taking them down and putting new ones in, increasing the quality and therefore increasing the comfort level for our soldiers and families who are put through some pretty heavy rotations and moves.
We just have a minute or so left, but what struck me as I read this is that this is a logical partnership because this contractor builds houses for a living. The Army doesn't build houses for a living. They run soldiers through buildings for a living, and so it seems everybody in this equation is doing what they do for a living.
Absolutely, and in our partnerships, we want to focus on core competencies. We're partnering with utilities on renewable energy. That is their core competency. Partnering with housing developers on our housing development and project management. That is their core competency. So it really has worked out a win-win for all.
My guest is Catherine Hammack, the Assistant Secretary of the Army for Installations, Energy, and Environment. And I'm very fortunate to have caught you in between travels all over the globe. You recently were in Korea. Looking at the installations there and the footprint that the Army occupies in Korea. And you and I have spoken on a number of occasions at the review process that you have undertaken and continue to undertake in the Army to examine what footprints look like around the world, not just for the sake of those locations, but for the sake of learning how to maximize a base realignment and closure process if you're ever allowed to have one here in the United States. I imagine your position continues to be that you need another round of BRAC.
Absolutely, because if you look at where we are, for an instance, take South Korea. We have been in locations where we ended up after the Korean War. And so to do an assessment of where we need to be in partnership with the South Koreans, we have all agreed that there was another location expanding Camp Humphreys a little further south out of Seoul, gives some of that Seoul footprint back to the Koreans to develop. And they're developing it as a central park. It's really going to be amazing and something that they are looking forward to use. So as we build up in Camp Humphreys, and frankly, the South Koreans are putting up the majority of the money, the funds, the construction capability there to our specifications. so that we can be operational in that part of the world. And I remind people why we're still in South Korea, and that's really to act as a deterrent to some of the surrounding threats in that region. And the more forward deployed we are, the better we can deter a threat before it reaches our shoreline. So we are going to remain in Korea for a while, but we are reducing our footprint, returning land to the South Koreans for them to put to use to better their economy. And we're doing the same thing in Germany. And it's interesting to hear that some of the Syrian refugees are being housed in old army bases that we returned to the Germans, that they were looking at how to reuse them. Mm-hmm. And it's an appropriate reuse there. But in the United States, just like in Korea, where we ended up after the Korean War, our footprint in the United States is based upon where we ended up after World War II. So we've got a lot of World War II infrastructure to accommodate an army of 8.3 million. Well, you know, we're shrinking. And so by 2018, we're going to be down to 450,000. So if you just think of that rationally, there's a lot of excess. And we are around 18 to 20% excess right now. So we would like to shrink that footprint, return facilities and land to the American people to put to a better use. So we're going to consolidate into some of our best facilities, some of the locations where we are not encroached upon, because as you know, the American population is growing. And so as cities grow, quite often they're getting closer and closer to our bases, and that land becomes more valuable to the community. So if we can move our mission, it's a win-win for all.
The House and Senate will vote later this week on the National Defense Authorization Act that a deal was just announced about yesterday. I have not looked at the text of the agreement that was signed off on, but there has been money in there for the military to at least look at a study base realignment and closure. They're still not saying yes, but do you take the fact that they are allowing you to look at it and putting some money behind that as a step in the right direction? Is that a hopeful sign, or is it just the way things are?
Well, you can't decrease budgets and run the same number of facility. I mean, that's an equation that doesn't work. Mm-hmm. So I think I am optimistic that Congress is recognizing that we need to study and figure out where we can do those consolidations.
Well, in a few moments, you and I will make way for the programs to continue on Federal News Radio. But we're going to go into another studio and talk about the energy security and sustainability strategy that is just out from your office. Give me in 30 seconds to a minute a synopsis of the discussion that you and I will have about that strategy.
It is about the why. You and I talk about the what: energy efficiency, mm-hmm. renewable energy. This is about the why we do it: to inform decisions, optimize use, assure access, build resiliency, and to drive innovation. And that's really why it is important that as an army, we have an energy strategy.
We'll go through each of those subjects in turn, and that conversation will be archived later today on federalnewsradio.com, and it'll play on in-depth in the coming days. Madam Secretary, it's great to see you as always. Thank you very much for your time today.
Wonderful to see you again, Francis.